Let's, like I said, lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, get our weekly view from the middle. Our Wednesday guest will be in Tulsa Friday and Sunday, first two rounds at the Bank of Oklahoma Center. You can follow along in the red section of the paper, USA Today, online, usatoday.com. On Twitter, it's at George Schroeder. George, happy March Madness. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. People screaming in the background.
yeah.
I love it.
Sorry
I love
about
it.
That.
That's quite all right. We're used to it. I've got grandkids now. It's par for the course, George. I was trying to do the math. You know, this time of year, we see all the legendary moments from the history of this tournament. And I remember being a 20-year-old who was supposed to be in a college class, but I was watching the tournament. Arkansas, your hometown team, was playing Louisville. NBC cut away. It was Bryant Gumbel to Marv Albert. What do you remember about that U.S. Reed shot, which is probably one of, you know, until they won the tournament and were forced under Nolan Richardson, that was probably one of the biggest moments in the program's history back then.
Oh, well, they've been to the Final Four a couple years before that. But, yeah, I mean, and they didn't get there that in 1981, but they did beat Louisville. Scored with 5 or 6 or 7 seconds left, and then U.S. Reed was a freshman. He might have been a sophomore guard, and he was an Arkansas kid from Pine Bluff, Arkansas. So you always kind of, as a kid, you always liked the homegrown guys even more when you had them. And, you know, he dribbled up the court, and Louisville made it really tough, and he barely, you know, he couldn't even get it past half court, and he heaved it up, and it went in, and it was, you know, it was unbelievable, quite frankly. What's interesting too is there were two other buzzer beaters on the same day. Rolando Blackman at almost the same time. I think he hit a buzzer beater to beat what, Oregon State? Rolando Blackman.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And Oregon State was a top seed. And then I think maybe St. Joe. No, who? DePaul had one too, I think. So, but I didn't. I'll just be honest with you. I didn't pay a ton of attention to the other two. I just recall, and this is back in the day, right? I lived in Little Rock. I just recall running outside and hearing people honking their horns. It was that kind of thing.
That's awesome. And I totally forgot the 79 Arkansas team. A lot of people forget. They were the fourth team in there with Magic and Bird, and I think it was Pennsylvania. So, yeah.
I think it was Notre Dame, and they beat Notre Dame in the third place game, but whatever year that was, and I forget, but Arkansas had what they called the triplets at that time with Sidney Moncrief and Marvin Delph and Ron Brewer, so U.S. Reed was sort of the next supposed star to sort of try to build on that, and they never quite got back to that level, but that was a big time moment, that half court shot in 81. What's interesting too, when you said, Steve, that you wanted to talk about that today, I actually went and looked up a story that John Solomon, a friend of mine who used to work at CBSSports.com, did a couple of years back, because I covered a game in an Oklahoma City first-round game 2 or 3 years ago. I guess it was 3 years ago now, when Paul Jesperson
of Northern Iowa
banked in a half-court shot to beat Texas. And it was unbelievable. Of course, then Northern Iowa's next claim to fame was losing a 10-point lead with 30 seconds left against the Texas A&M team they had dominated until those 30 seconds. But it was I covered that game, and just amazing to think about that those are the only two half-court shots to ever really happen in an NCAA tournament game, is my understanding.
No, you're right, and I was going through all the buzzer beaters earlier, and I should have been doing my job instead. I was watching highlights.
Hey, listen, tell the program director that's part of the gig right there. You've got to know these things to be able to impart the wisdom to the listeners.
All right, I'm sold.
Like
and you're my agent. We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. You know, beyond just saying who's going to be in the Final Four, I like going through these regions. I guess the question, sometimes there's a year where there's really one question. If you start in the East with a healthy Duke, do you think it's them, or do you see, or who you think it might give them a run in their bracket?
I'm not sure anybody gives them a run in their bracket. I'm not high on Michigan State, the 2 seed. I'm not high on LSU, the 3 seed. I wasn't incredibly high on them, period. I mean, I think they're good enough to beat anybody and good enough to lose to anybody. Talk about LSU. But with the issues that have happened off the court with Will Wade, their coach being suspended, I think this is Duke's region to win. And I think they will. I think they'll come out of the East, and I don't think it'll be particularly close. Now, I am not one of those people that thinks this is Duke's tournament, and we're talking about Ivan Drago versus the field here, right? I'm not one of those people. But because that Zion Williamson is a freak of nature. It's cool that he's back and healthy, and I hope he plays, you know, as many games as we can possibly see him play right up into that Monday night. But they shoot the three so poorly that they are susceptible to getting beat by some team that gets hot from the outside. And so I don't see it happening in the East region, but, you know, I guess it could. But I do think it could happen if and when they get to Minneapolis in the Final Four at some point.
Yeah, I don't think it's hard to just look at a team and say they're definitely going to win it all. I mean, that's too much of a leap of faith. In the South, of course, we've got Virginia, who's looking to make amends over that historic loss as a 1 seed last year. The Red Hot Ducks are there. The defending champs are there. Tennessee has had a tremendous year. Kansas State is good, a little banged up. Who are some of the teams you're looking at that could escape the South?
Well, listen, I'm one of those people that is, and this could be famous last words, and next Wednesday you could be talking to me about this, but I'm one of those people that watched the Pac-12 tournament and thought to myself, look, I don't know what that Oregon Ducks team's ceiling is, but it's a lot higher than it seemed like it was a month ago.
Yeah.
I don't think they can get out of the region and into Minneapolis, but I do think they look like a team that could be playing Virginia in the Sweet 16. I do think that. And I think they could give Virginia problems because of their length and athleticism. That said, I think Tony Bennett is a terrific coach. This Virginia team is a lot better than last year's Virginia team, which was a 1 seed. So I think we're probably headed towards a 1-2 matchup, Virginia-Tennessee. And I don't know why I did this. I just put Tennessee in there, into Minneapolis for some reason. I still can't trust these Virginia teams. Now, let me say this. I think Tennessee is, it's not like Tennessee is one of those great big athletic teams that can give Virginia problems, but they're the same kind of smart, savvy, well-coached team that Virginia is. So I think it could be a terrific matchup if they got that in the regional final.
Yeah, and that duet of Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, those guys are really, really good players. Now, you'll see a couple of games in the West region. The tenacious defense of Texas Tech, we've talked about them. The Red Raiders off their best run ever. They made the Elite Eight last year. We've talked about Chris Beard, probably going to be a very hot coaching commodity. How deep you think that team could go?
Well, I mean, I think they could get to the regional final if things go well. Because of the defense and because their offense has evolved and developed over the course of the year, but they can't afford to have a clunker night offensively, and they had some of those middle of the season in the Big 12. But, you know, a lot of times you get out of one of these tough leagues and you find matchups that you like a lot better than playing those teams that are so familiar with you, and I think Texas Tech could be one of those. And you know, I'm talking about a team that is the co-champion of the Big 12, so it's not like they struggled a ton in the Big 12. But I am really not a fan of Michigan at this point. I think they're so offensively challenged. They defend a little bit like Texas Tech, so that's interesting. But I think the Nevada-Florida winner could give Michigan trouble. I'm interested in seeing what Buffalo can do, and obviously we've got to see if it's Arizona State or St. John's that they're playing. So I think that bottom half of the bracket is pretty interesting. The top half of the bracket, Florida State's pretty good. But I'm expecting Gonzaga to emerge and get to the regional final.
Yeah, that game tonight, I mean, Chris Mullin versus Bobby Hurley to play Bobby Hurley's old team. I just, you know, stories like that, you as a sports journalist, I mean, even though you might not pick either of those three teams to advance, it's kind of compelling, all the connections, great players, the program Hurley left, maybe getting a chance to face them. It's a pretty neat little story.
Yeah, it really is. You know, we'll see how it goes for them. But You know, they got to get past St. John's first. By the way, right. The old sort of, you got Bobby Hurley, who I think is, where is he from, Brooklyn? I think, no, he's from New Jersey. And then you got St. John's with Chris Mullins. Kind of got the old New York Northeast connection thing going there with those two. So kind of interesting just to watch that game tonight in Dayton.
I'm looking forward to that, kind of my old stomping ground, as we continue with George Schroeder, USA Today, who actually wrote the Midwest preview. Houston, an interesting three.
Here's why. It's not that I haven't tried to study up on those teams, but they basically say, all right, the bracket is out. You've got about 75 minutes, and we need it so we can get it into the print editions. And it, so it's like, okay, here we go.
75 minutes.
Well, give or take. Mostly take, but, you know.
All right, so, we'll let you off the hook here.
But that is the region that I'm covering. I'm going to Tulsa and then Kansas City and then Minneapolis. So I will be covering mostly the Midwest region. Obviously, have a little bit of the West, as we talked about earlier, here in Tulsa this week.
You know, in that preview, though, you did note that 7-10 with Wofford, Fletcher McGee. I mean, he makes a third three-pointer. He becomes the all-time leader. Seton Hall, from another, speaking of Jersey, they've been all over the place, but have some really good wins. What intrigued you about that matchup?
Well, just what you said. I mean, the fact that, first of all, if Wofford beats Seton Hall, we're all going to go, oh, what a great upset, when by the seed lines, it's not an upset. Not even especially near an upset. And I haven't looked at what the lines are out of Vegas or anything like that, but it's a really good Wofford team. Plus, you got to like them because they're the Terriers. I mean, that's just kind of cool, right?
But yeah.
Fletcher McGee, who sounds like a character in a Pat Conroy novel, to stick with the South Carolina angle since Wofford's in South Carolina, although it's in the upstate. But it's not just that he hits threes, but if you haven't watched him, do yourself a favor and watch, try to find a way to watch that game, because his form is anything but classic. Now, he's honed it, but he can torch his body and twist in weird ways as he's going up, and then somehow the shoulders are always square and the ball seems to go in the hoop almost all the time, even while he's like twisted up all funny and you're like, how can you even try that shot? And it is an amazing thing to watch, and he's about as good a shooter as we've had in this tournament in a long time.
No, I love watching that guy. And by the way, the irony that you mentioned Pat Conroy, my wife's favorite all-time book, is Prince of Tides. So there you go. Couple final thoughts for George.
Well, if he played for the Citadel, which is obviously a Pat Conroy staple, and it's where he went to school, then it would be perfect. But he plays for Wofford, and so I'm going to go with the fact that he sounds like a Pat Conroy character.
All right, no, that's good stuff. And by the way, you were right. Seton Hall is actually a 3.5-point underdog in that game, so it's not. It wouldn't really be an upset. You know, I mentioned the region that literally has two blue bloods because they wear blue, Kentucky and North Carolina, 1 and 2. I mean, the Wildcats have the great freshmen, but they also have Reed Travis, the senior transfer. P.J. Washington's a sophomore. Carolina, it's not a typical Carolina team. They don't have like 7 lottery picks. How do you see that bracket playing out?
Well, I think Carolina is the best team in the bracket. And quite frankly, going back to our earlier conversation about Duke, everybody took that ACC tournament semifinal last week and went, oh, see, when Zion is back, see what happens, they win. Well, they won by one. It was basically who had the ball last. You know, it was one of those kind of games. I'm not convinced that we didn't find out that North Carolina is every bit they're equal or better than they are, even with Zion. So I make North Carolina the kind of team that can win the whole thing, and without question. Obviously, I'm not saying a whole lot. They're a one seed. I get that. But I wouldn't be stunned if you wanted to make them the favorite, because I think we get a little bit boggled with the whole Zion thing. And they're an interesting mix, because Kobe White is a precocious freshman, plus he's got that crazy hair. And then you've got the senior leadership too, and so they're a mix of veterans and young guys, and it's an interesting way to build a team that's different than the way Coach K has done it down the road, or John Calipari going to this region has done it with the one and done era. So it's kind of an interesting thing that Roy Williams is doing, and it's kind of sustainable. I think we've seen him in 2 of the last 3 years, we've seen him in the final. But listen, I really like this John Calipari Kentucky team. They're like a lot of his teams. They got better as the year went on. Very, very young, got better as the year went on. Travis Hero is a guy to pay attention to, who's not one of those sort of draft lottery guys. But let me just say this. Don't sleep on Kelvin Sampson's Houston Cougars, the 3 seed, which Kentucky could meet, you know, potentially in the Sweet 16. Don't sleep on those guys at all, because they're really, really good.
Yeah, and they had it. I mean, you win 30 games and play like they do, and Samson's been a great tournament coach as well. So I know you've been kind of hinting. Have you actually filled out a bracket? And if so, who gets to Minneapolis? And to quote Dick Vitale, who gets to cut down the nets?
I have filled out a bracket. So has my younger son, Christopher, who he picked them mostly by mascots, which means he's going to wipe the floor with me. And that's how that works, right?
Of course.
But I'm staring at my bracket here on usatoday.com that I actually filled out electronically. You know, we all do that now. And I have, in the Final Four, I have Duke, Texas Tech, North Carolina, and Tennessee. I have Duke and Tennessee in the finals, and I have Tennessee winning it. And you know why I'm doing that? Because I got no idea, and I didn't want to pick chalk.
All right, I like it. I've been on the Vols all year, so that's their kiss of death.
Well, I think the conventional wisdom is you can't win a national title without at least one lottery pick type surefire first round guy, and they don't have that. But I would, and even if you look at the recent Villanova teams, they didn't have necessarily the lottery pick, but they did end up having first-round draft guys. You just maybe didn't know it at the time. And so it's interesting to think about that and just to think, can you win it with some, kind of a veteran team? You know, they're very talented, don't get me wrong, but not necessarily top of the NBA draft guys, but very talented, great chemistry, play the game really hard and smart. Can you win it with those guys against teams that have more of the top-shelf talent? And the conventional wisdom is you can't. And so I guess I'm sort of pulling a little bit with my heart that maybe they can. I think Duke ought to be the favorite. Duke and North Carolina probably are their two prohibitive favorites. But I'm just going to go with Tennessee just to see what happens.
No, they should make a run. I mean, Rick Barnes has been to a Final Four with Texas. He's underachieved a lot, but that's a darn good team. All right, George, I believe that is a ton of information. Folks out there, now you can do with it as you please. Enjoy your trip to Tulsa, and we look forward to catching up next week and see what lies ahead in Kansas City. George, always a pleasure. By the way, who did Christopher pick to win the whole thing?
I have to look. I don't have it in front of me here, okay. but he did. But listen, both he and my older son George had the Ducks going a long way.
Okay.
So just FYI, and they are clearly picking with their hearts on that one.
You got to love it. Hey, George, fun stuff as always. Travel safe and enjoy.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy. All right. Now, 284. 284-